Or will they call it ALC, alcohol, ALC? ALC by volume? I don't even know what ALC is. What do you think that would be?
I don't know. Let's look it up.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Mr. Ted Willett, it is episode 133 of the Trailer Junkies podcast on a Friday night. How the heck are you?
I am good as always. Thank you so much, Jimmy.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're always well. You know, Superman is good. Ted is well. There we go.
Can I be
man.
Both? I want to be good and well.
Good and well. So you're like a healthy good guy. Okay. All right, so speaking of health, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I am still aging your fine beer in my cool, dry place.
Nice.
In my cabinet. So that's aging right now. And I guess tonight or this weekend, I think I could put it in the fridge for a week for next week, yeah?
Yeah, let's do that. I was thinking about cracking one tomorrow I had in the fridge for a little bit, and then I'll give you my tasting notes, and I'll see how ready it is. But I think next week would be a good time to have it.
Okay, good. So this for this week, I actually bought this in the middle of the week, and I was going to drink it, and then Anne decided she was going to drink. And she doesn't drink beer, as you know.
Right.
So when she was drinking her champagne, or what was it, Prosecco, I got her
Moscato or something.
No, Prosecco. I got her a couple of bottles of Prosecco.
There you go.
And we just drank one the other night. But I was like, instead of drinking my beer, I was like, oh, she's like, well, I'm not going to drink this bottle of Prosecco alone. I said, so I'll put the beer away. So it is a typical beer. Everyone's had it, but if you haven't, you must. You should.
Bud Light.
It's a Stone's Arrogant Bastard Ale.
Oh, I love that beer.
Classic.
One of my favorites. Yeah, it's a great one.
And then it was like half price at Ralph's when I bought it. So I was like, oh.
Yeah, I went to my friend Jared's, stopped at his house. We went for a ride one time. He's one of the guys I ride with. And stopped at his house, met his wife for the first time, his kids and everything. And he's like, I'll have a quick beer. It's like 11 o'clock in the morning. We got finished with the ride. So I thought, okay, we'll have a beer. He's like, yeah, you like Arrogant Bastard? It was a 16-ouncer. I said, sure, I like this.
Uh-huh.
So I drink one. He's like, yeah, we don't like it. He gave me like a 12-pack.
Oh, my God.
maybe not 12-pack, because they each had one, so I guess 10. I had one there, so he
brought home
nine. Yeah. I'm like, are you serious? You don't want these? You know? So he's like, no, we don't like it at all. I'm like, no, I'll take it, sure.
What's his beer of choice?
What
does he keep in the fridge? Pabst Blue Ribbon or something? Oh.
No.
Okay.
He just doesn't like the super bitter, and that was just too bitter for him, you know? He doesn't like the super, like, hoppy bitter.
I love
bitter.
The bitter.
He likes the more grainy bitter, you know? So, like, Imperial Stouts.
He likes the smooth stouts, yeah.
Exactly. Like, the kind of burnt grain profiles and things like that. So anyway, so the boys went and got their flu. Well, it wasn't the shots. It was like the up the nose squirts. And the doctor is down the street from Valley Brewers, where I get my brewing grains and, you know, hops and yeast and everything when I do homebrew.
Right. All your stuff for your homebrew.
All my stuff. Yeah, my recipes. So I always tell the boys, I'm like, we're going to stop there, you know, and like they get their doctor's appointments gives me an excuse to go to the brewery or the Valley Brewers. So I got a bunch of beers, Faction. Well, ales Ooh. For Al's. I don't even know. So it's an Imperial IPA, ales for Al's, 8.5% ABV, or will they call it ALC, alcohol ALC? ALC by volume? I don't even know what ALC is. What do you think that would be?
I don't know. Let's look it up.
Yeah. So anyway, hops is L's Hop Blend. Okay, so that doesn't tell me anything. American Two Row and Vienna. That's the malts.
We're all going to feel stupid when we think, what does ALC stand for? When it says ALC by volume, what do you think that stands for?
Alcohol. I have no idea.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Alcohol by volume.
So it's not like an acronym or anything. It's just alcohol by volume.
It's just an abbreviation of alcohol.
Right. It's not a... Oh, jeez.
And then you said it yourself. You said it's ALC by volume.
That's so amazing. So anyway, yeah, Alameda, California is where it is. So let me open this sucker, see how it is. Enough talking.
What's your ABV?
We're drinking. 8.5.
Oh, nice. You beat
Holy
me.
Holy cow. That was like a hop blast to the nose opening that thing.
Yeah, Arrogant Bastards at 7.2. Ugh,
it's an arms race. It's always an arms race with you. So we have the Karma-like glasses.
Yeah.
I walked in their cooler. I don't know why. Right where my eye went, boom, 2 Karma-like bottles. I was like, I'll take them. So me and Clarissa had them when she got home in our Karma-like glasses.
Nice.
Oh, wow. That smells like peaches. That's so bizarre.
Mm. A hop blast to start when you crack it, and now peaches on the back end?
No, smell-wise, you know, odor-wise. Odor? I don't know. Odor yeah. just sounds no, dirty, but...
No, it's like...
Let me let the head go odor. Down. I'll get to you. So, okay. Arrogant Bastard, I've had it a million times. Maybe not a million times.
Bunch
but I've
of
had
times.
It a lot. What do you like about Arrogant Bastard?
I do like the bitterness. I like the bitterness.
It is bitter, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's weighty. It's got some heft to it, you know?
It's almost like a bitter red ale or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's got...
It's not an IPA, right?
I thought it was, but yeah. I guess it's not. I guess it's just an ale.
It's like super malt. It's like a super bitter malt.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, wow. That's nothing... It smells like peaches. But it's... it's not even hazy, but it has kind of that lactose sweetness. It's sweet on the front end, really bitter on the back.
Mm.
It almost has like coconut notes to it. Oh wow, that thing's dark. Look at that. No, this is like really complex, man. This is complex. Wow, this is really amazing. She was Because I go
Hashtag
in there
doing too much.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I go in there, and anytime I'm in there, I'm always like, Sandy, you know, this is what I'm looking for. Today, I always go in with an agenda. Today, I'm like, I want either stouts or porters that are traditional. I don't want any coconut, any chocolate. I don't want any of that stuff. I just want roasted. I want something like a West Coast IPA, no hazy, no fruit. No citrus or anything. Just give me that malty bitter.
Right.
So she, you know, and then I said, and any Belgian is always a good Belgian to me. So she guides me where to go on the beers that I describe. And man, she did not fail me on this thing. It's like super, it's really good.
That's awesome.
All right. So, Mr. Ted, your week, anything exciting happening this week or what's going on with you?
Yeah. So this week we got our guest house back. We had a renter.
What, people moved out or?
Yeah, they moved out. Okay. And because we got it back, I was like, ooh, I'm going to move out of the dining room. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I guess now I got to sleep in here because Ann's kicking me out.
No. So, but before we do that, we got to fix it up a little bit. So. We actually bought a desk.
Do you get internet out there?
Yeah, yeah. There's actually hardwire out there. So I think I'm going to run the wire straight to the computer so it'll be a little bit faster. So I got a beautiful desk. I don't know. Have you ever been to the hotel consignment store over here?
Hotel consignment store?
It's like they sell used hotel furniture.
Oh, no. Because we bought... our bar stools from a place in somewhere Reseda, maybe it was on Parthenia or something. Frank took us over there and it was like this restaurant furniture place.
Oh, okay.
And it was like super nice high-end stuff. So we ordered these bar stools that were like built in the Netherlands. they were like stainless and they had this beautiful wood and everything. And they sent us this wrong color. So I called them up. I said, I ordered these other colors, you know? And they said, oh, wow. Okay. You know, we screwed up. How can we like rectify the whole thing? And they looked at the paperwork. They're like, yeah, we sent you this, like, I don't even know, rustic looking thing. And we see that you wanted the stainless ones and we sent you the wrong ones. And what can we do? I said, I'll tell you what. And I was so happy they did it because I was like, wow, these things look way better than the ones we ordered. So I said, I'll tell you what. Knock like, you know, I don't even know what it was. I think I said knock like 50% off and we'll call it a day.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, done deal. They took like half price.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are expensive. They were like a few hundred dollars. Maybe I don't even know what they were. $500 a stool or something. Like something ridiculous. So instead of $1,500, I think we got them for like $750. And I was like, okay, I can handle that. So, yeah, but anyway, your desk. Sorry to derail the conversation.
No worries. So, yeah, so I got a desk. We think it you know, they all have like tags on everything. And the big lots that were in there, there was Four Seasons. I guess they remodeled a bunch of rooms. And then...
Now, were these similar to the desks that, like, if you go into a hotel and it's their little desk where, like, you would do as, like, a traveling salesman?
Yeah, if we got it from the Comfort Inn. But this isn't from the Comfort Inn. This is from, like, the Four Seasons and stuff.
Okay, is it a standing desk or canopy?
No,
or?
It's just a regular desk. I'll show you a picture.
Okay.
We'll put a picture up there once.
I was saying, now that you're showing me, we got to, like, tell everybody, right?
But, yeah, no, it was quite the deal. Got a great deal on it. I like the bargain. But it was amazing. So very happy with the headboard and a desk.
So it's like the Four Seasons.
It's like they remodel 100 rooms.
Yeah, but they have like this outrageously expensive furniture in their rooms. And then when they remodel, they just don't throw it in a dumpster. They bring it to like a reseller. Now, it's not really a computer desk per se. It's just like a nice desk.
Just a nice desk. And
what's the wood? Walnut?
Yeah, it's a beautiful wood.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And then Anne wanted a headboard, so we got a headboard, another beautiful piece for like $75.
Nice.
So we got out of there for like $300 with like this desk and the headboard and a bed frame and stuff. So it was amazing.
Yeah, no, that's very cool.
Bargain hunters,
man. You guys got to start your own reality TV show.
Oh, and then Frank came to help us drag it with his minivan because I was like, this won't fit anywhere, you know? Oh my God. And you saw the glass top on there, you know?
Yeah.
And I moved furniture for like 8 years.
You did not break it.
No, I moved furniture for 8 years. So they're trying to move it around and stuff. So I picked up the glass top because it was like precariously, they put it off on an angle. So I picked it up and I'm holding it. It's a heavy piece of glass, right?
Sure. Yeah, but you're buff.
I'm fine. I've been working out. It's good.
That's right.
So I have it resting on my hand and my hand is on a different desk because I'm waiting for them to get it all situated, to get it out of the area, and then they're going to put it back on. This young guy walks up to me and he was like, and he, you know, motions to me and he goes, I'll take it. He's like, I'll take it. I was like, okay, you know, it's heavy, you know, make sure to... You're stable, but I wasn't going to get all like old man on him. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to give him advice. He obviously works at a furniture.
You're going to dad-splain.
I know. So I let him do it. He put it down. Like I had my hand under it, which of course pinched my hand a little bit, but that's the safest way to be, right? He placed it down on this card table, you know, and he put it straight there and he had it on the two sides. He go, you know, they have it all. They have the right desk positioned. He goes to pick it up, right? And the way that he goes to pick it up, he tweaks it off the corner and it just slips. You know, it's like wood and glass. Like it doesn't have the bumpers. It slipped right off the edge, out of his hands, onto the floor, shattered into 1,000 pieces.
Oh, God.
And I was like, well, better here than at my house, you know?
So they get you a new one?
Yeah. They're like, oh, we got 100 of those in the back, you know? It's the only one in the showroom that had glass on the top. And I was like, why don't these other desks have glass on the top?
And because they broke all the other ones.
So then they took another hour to dig out the other one, you know, because they put them all away. But the kid was like sweating bricks, and I was just like, ugh, I felt so bad for him. But I was just like, I'm getting out of here. I'm not sticking around to, you know, have them say like, well, why did you pick it up? And I was like, well, if you would have let me hold it, it would be fine, you know. But exactly. they didn't bulk too much, so it was fine. Good deal.
That's good. Nice. Yeah, I gotta commend you though, man.
What part?
Well, me and Anne go on this texting bender.
You guys are crazy. You guys are like the text chain between the four of us. It's just like Clarissa and I are what working and like, you know, I think you guys do that even when I'm working out and stuff. It's like you guys do it all hours of the day and you're just like ranting and ranting. And I'm like, by the time I tune in, you know, by the time I pull my phone out, it's got like 47. And I was like, who texts 47 times?
Oh my God, how did that happen? No, but I love though how you're like, you guys are crazy, whatever, and you said something, and my only thought was, dude, you just I can't believe you just read through all of that.
No, I said you're crazy for the number 47. I haven't even caught up to, you know, I don't think to this day.
Oh, I thought you read it. Okay, I don't commend you. I thought you read through our whole, like, diatribe of whatever we were talking about.
I'm a very slow reader, okay? I don't.
But, yeah, we were completely just ripping on things and stuff. And it was, yeah, that was pretty funny. That was pretty, yeah. And every once in a while, like, Clarissa will just have, like, a smiley face.
Or Clarissa does like a non sequitur and you're like, what's going on? What is she talking about?
Exactly.
I did read that like part. I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Something completely off, right? But yeah, the funny thing is though, other than like, I mean, we're in the throes of the political season, the election cycle.
Yes.
You know, I mean, in our small town, I don't even know what it is. AAUW, American University Women or American Association of University Women or yeah. something. Anyway, they're putting on all these forums for our local town.
Oh, nice.
Our school board, our
all the referendums and stuff.
No, but all the local stuff like mayor.
Oh, okay.
Council members to have like a place of debate and such. They're putting these things on and then, you know, you can tune in through like Zoom and then they put it on YouTube afterwards. Wow. And stuff. So at least the local people
can be informed.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a presidential debate is all over the TV, but the local stuff in a town of, you know, or in a geographic area of 100,000 people or less. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That stuff doesn't resonate anywhere as far as like media. So they're putting this stuff together, which is really cool. And it gives you a chance to like hear what the local politicians and local ideas and school board members and what they think and what they believe. And
we're going to get rid of the vending machine at the corner of 3rd and Main.
Exactly.
That's been an eyesore there for 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, there, some of the stuff you're just like rolling your eyes at, you're like, oh my God, it's Mayberry, you know, but no. So I've watched some of that stuff and, you know, we're just in the thick of election season and trying to figure out like all in California. I know not everybody has a political system the way California. I think the only other state that does is Louisiana.
Oh, really?
Of the 50 states, California and Louisiana have the same system or very similar system. I think all the other states like don't. So we're completely whacked. So you're trying to figure out, you know, there's like all these propositions.
Oh, right. Propositions. Yeah.
Yeah. Or sometimes there's referendums and so on. But mm-hmm. you have all these things and it's like, and they're written in such a way that the four argues against and the against argues for. You're completely confused. Yes is a no vote and no is a yes vote. You know, it's, and you're just like, yes on prop
22,
whatever it is. Yes on prop 2 means no, means you're against it. And they're written in these like bizarre ways that just confuse the daylights out of anybody.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there and you're like, and they send you these booklets that say like, well, here's all the information. Just read it. And it's like hundreds of pages. And you're like, who on earth has time to read this?
Yeah.
You know, and I read, I mean, I can say I read the whole thing, but like I do read a lot of it. And the more I read, the more confused I get.
Yeah. Are you, do you get phone calls? Do you get phone calls from the people that are for and against the propositions? I got a phone call for Prop J.
Oh, that must be a local to LA. We don't have that one.
Yeah. And I was filling it. Oh, yeah. So I was looking at all the propositions and it had all the number propositions. But then the day after I did that, I got a call from the Prop J people.
And what's Prop J for those who don't know, like myself?
For Prop J, now you're testing me. Prop J is like taking this slush fund that the LAPD and other public services take from. It's like $1 billion. That they take from and taking that extra money, not any part of their budget, but the extra money that they dip into from time to time and
to go about like tanks and stuff.
Yeah. And repurposing it towards ending recidivism, and it's repurposing it for social justice. And
oh, I got
stuff.
You.
And I'm like, oh yeah, you got me. I was like, but why isn't it in my booklet? They're like, oh, it got in late. So we have to this is why we're doing this big call campaign. And I said, well, you know, that's interesting. I like your take on it. I think, you know, I think it's something that aligns with my, you know, voting.
Oh, so it was not a robocall.
Not a robocall. It's a dude. Just a dude that's like, how do you think you're voting on this? And then I said, but where can I find more information on this? And he goes, all right, well, you can find it on the website.
Great question.
And I was like, all right, what's your website? Yes on Jay? And he goes, oh, it's my first day, man. I'm sorry. I should know more about this, but you're like grilling me. I was like, no, it's cool. Just find out what the website is and tell me. And then he came back and he was like, all right, here's the website. I forget. It was like Yes on Jay. And it was something about Vote LA or something. And he was like, but if you want some impartial information on it, you probably should go and find it like at Ballotpedia or something like that. And I was like, oh man, this, you're really on top of it to say that if I want something impartial, you can go to our website, but we're obviously Yes on Jay, so you're not going to get an impartial look into it. So you might want to look other places. And I was like,
something nonpartisan.
I was really impressed by this guy, like pushing me away from, you know, like his site that's going to push his agenda. But it was refreshing.
All the more reason to vote yes.
Exactly. Right. The honesty of it just made it so much more appealing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Other than that, though, I mean, like I said, it's just I've been in just trying to figure out election stuff. And,
I will say that Ann has told me a couple times this week, or we were working out together this morning, and she said to me, she goes, do you ever think Jimmy doesn't really maybe he's not politically aligned with us? And I was like, every time he does that, I will tell you 98% of the time is to get your goat.
Wait, every time I do what?
Like disagree with her politically, or like kind of do like a devil's advocate thing.
Well, like today she was talking about like Trump. And you know, sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes it's like today it was like Trump, funneled money through like a hotel or something that wasn't his or something like that. Right.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I said, you know, that's how rich people operate, you know, like that's just what they do. They know the game better than we do.
Right.
And I truly believe they're not doing anything illegal. They just know how to play the game. Obviously, they're not going to go to jail for these things,
right,
because it's not illegal. I'm not saying it's ethical. It's just not illegal. And then she said, you know, we were talking, she said something about the haircut or something. And I said, and you guys tried to get a haircut of Audrey's written off or something.
Oh, right. Our tax people said, no, don't do it.
And I was just like, I wasn't even trying to get at her or anything. I was just like, well, what if it was part of his brand? Like his hair is his brand.
I saw that text come across and I was like, what are they talking about now? Because I catch these little glimpses into it. And if it's short, I read it. But then if it's long, I'm just like, oh, they're deep in it now. I get it. I can't read a page.
That's hilarious. No, but I was dead serious though. Like, what if, like, you have this crazy, like, I don't even know, comb over thing. And it's so, like, if you, like, I guarantee you, even before president, right?
Mm-hmm.
You show this weird hair and everybody's like, oh, it's Donald Trump's hair. He's had that hair for 35 years. could he get it written off as a brand? I don't even know. But yeah, you know, okay, there's times where I'm like, you know, I'm just going to like rib Ann here because she's so deep into it and so angry. Like, I got to make light of this because otherwise we're all going to go insane. But I would say 99.5%. Yeah, I'm on par, you know, like everything we've been talking about, man. I am so frustrated and aggravated right alongside with you guys to the nth degree. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Anyway, speaking of all this news.
Yes. News.
Let's talk about the news of the world. In theaters, Christmas. Do they know something we don't know about the vaccine?
Well, Tom Hanks already had COVID.
Or are they optimistic?
Tom Hanks already had COVID, so he's safe, I guess, right?
he had COVID? Course.
Yeah. He and Rita Wilson, they had COVID. They got COVID in Australia. I don't even know. Maybe they were filming this movie while they're all at the end of it. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So Christmas, obviously, I think it's optimistic. I think, you know, they said this Christmas, which is very optimistic. Maybe they don't know exactly which Christmas, you know what I mean?
That's true. They didn't say.
Christmas 2025, you know what I mean? but I think it's just Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks can will it away. Like, you know, he can.
I guess. All I know is you're not watching this.
Why? Oh, it's because it's a Western.
It's a Western. Yeah, you're not into Westerns.
I hear the log line, right? And I hear the stuff that they talk about in the trailer. And he's a captain in the military.
What's a log line?
Log line. It's like the gist of the story. It's like a two-sentence concept of what this is about.
Like, he's got to get the child, I mean this girl, back to her family. I mean, does this remind you of The Mandalorian?
See, you think of The Mandalorian, but no, to me it's Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, okay.
He's a captain in the army.
Oh, okay.
And he's bringing this girl, the last of her family, back to her other, you know, the rest of her family.
Okay, yeah, you win. I think it's more Private Ryan than The Mandalorian. I was looking The Mandalorian, maybe because we're watching it.
The Western. And the Western, probably.
Well, the Western, but it's like, you know, the child and you have this girl.
Oh, yeah.
And he's bringing the, you know, Mando's bringing the child back. Tom Hanks is bringing the girl back, you know, and maybe that was part of it. But no, I think you're right, though. It's more of a Private Ryan movie than it is of a Mandalorian.
Yeah. And, you know, and you feel like throughout this whole thing that he's going to sacrifice himself for this girl, you know. And it's the question of will he get far enough along to ensure that she's there?
Right. Yeah.
And as he's laying her on the extended family's doorstep, he lays there dying, you know, and you could even see him saying, like, make sure that you make your life, make it worth it, make it worth all the sacrifice of myself and all the people. You know what I mean? It's like thematically, it's so funny. I was talking about themes with Bryce, and we'll get into that and what we're watching this week. But, you know, thematically, it just feels like you could just use the exact same theme of Saving Private Ryan. It's like the value of a young life is worth this, you know?
All these other
sacrifices of an adult's life, you know?
And what I love is early in the trailer, I don't know the guy's name or the actor's name, but it must be one of his soldiers or something. And he says, "Captain, why are you still doing this? Or why are you doing this?"
Yeah.
And I almost feel like he's asking Tom Hanks, "Tom, why do you keep acting? You don't need to act anymore. Like, why do you keep doing this?
Retire already."
Yeah. Because, I mean, the guy never needs to work another day in his life. Not. But yet he keeps showing up and he's punching the clock and he puts in the stellar performance every single time.
Yeah.
But why does he keep doing it? What's the driving force? You know, I mean, he has this inner force.
Yeah. He just, you know, I think he gets attached to a story, an idea, and it's really about, I mean, it feels like it's about history. He has this soft spot for history, and you give him a historical fiction story, and he just runs with it.
He's the kind of actor, I mean, you know, it's like you quit working. Well, why do you quit working? It's like people retire because they're tired of what they're doing, you know? whatever they're doing, it's like I'm burned out. I have to quit. But if you truly do love what you do, you never work a day in your life, as they say.
That is the saying.
And I think that's where Tom Hanks is. He's one of those rare souls. I'm not saying I don't enjoy going to work or, you know, like there's not bright spots in my day and stuff, but I could find other things to do with my time at moments. But I think Tom Hanks truly is one of those souls who just loves the craft, loves what he does. And he'll be one of those guys. He's like a Clint Eastwood. I mean, like the Mule or something. What was Clint Eastwood? 88 or something. He's still acting. I mean, it's just like he'll just keep going.
Doesn't need it. Just does it to do it because they are, you know, things that they like.
Exactly. Overall, though, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to watch this or not. I might. You know, if it's low hanging fruit and I see it on Netflix or, you know, on some other platform, you know, Hulu or something.
I'm not going to the theater in Christmas. I might go to drive-in.
The drive-in, yeah. I mean, I like Tom Hanks. I don't know if this story does it for me. Maybe. We'll see. What does do it, though, and what I think is the trailer was awesome. And I certainly cannot wait, because this is one of my favorite genres, film noir, is Mank.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, this looks amazing.
I think this was the best trailer I've seen this year.
Oh, it is amazing. You know, the one thing about the trailer is the jump cuts are so rapid.
Yeah.
You're hanging on trying to figure out what's going on as they're cutting across so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they cut across, you're not at all lost.
You're not at all lost.
You're right there. Boom, boom, boom. You're right there with it. You know what's going on, even though it's super fast.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's it. I just don't know. It's hard to see something like this, and you see the trailer for it, and you think the trailer is kind of spoofing it. You know, the first time I watched a trailer, I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, they're using the genre, and then they're doing an in-period trailer for this, and then they're doing this whole thing. And then when you watch it, subsequent viewings, when you watch it again and over again, there is a genuineness, there is a genuine nature that it just sells the vibe of the whole thing. Like, I don't like black and white. I think it's an alienation device. And yet in here it fits.
Let's back up a second. What do you mean an alienation device?
An alienation device is, to me, and the way I describe it, or the way I understood it from film school, is anything that takes you out of the experience as something that is photoreal.
You're saying photoreal is something in color, because
photoreal is in something that you could see with your eyes. Like when you watch a regular movie, you could get lost in the fact that you're in a movie by imagining you're along for the ride and you're in this space.
Okay.
So anything that separates you from that, one alienation device that you and I hate is like foreign language.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So like if we're watching a foreign language film, the fact we have to read subtitles is, to me, an alienation device. And it's not,
gotcha.
It's not that it's devised to alienate you, but it just so happens to separate you from the subject matter that you're watching and reminds you in a constant way that you're watching something.
In the modern era of filmmaking, where color and digital and CGI and everything can be added in to make it as real as possible, would you then say that an alienation device, assuming the movie was only made, like, let's say a Humphrey Bogart movie like The Maltese Falcon or something, would you say that black and white's an alienation device, even though they didn't have color film available to them at the time?
Yeah, you're right. Should you handicap it because that's all they could do at the time?
Exactly my point, because given the technology, they would have probably done it in color.
Right. And then to me, I think as long as it's something that can separate you from the material, it's an alienation device. So, you know, it's more so an alienation device now that that everything's all accessible. But then you could also say, oh, remember when they would hand color some stuff, you know, tinting all that. You know, they could colorize stuff now. So I don't know. I think it's always in the eye of the beholder. So yes, because I'm a man of 2020, I think it's an alienation device, even if it's an old movie. It's still separating me from connecting with a movie in a photoreal way.
Okay, with this movie, it's an artistic...
So with this movie, it is an artistic choice, and it is an alienation device, but it is done with so much care and so much respect for the way that Orson Welles did it. And, I mean, come on, David Fincher, like... When you talk about some of the, you know, we've talked about the greatest trailer of all times in a lot of people's list, it's The Social Network. The Social Network trailer is one of the best trailers of all time, and it's for a David Fincher movie.
Right.
So maybe David Fincher has, you know, he definitely has a say now, and I'm sure he did back then too, on how the trailer will look and what it sells. And this is one of those things where he did this tribute to Orson Welles and the screenwriter, and it is picture perfect. I can't wait to see this.
Oh, I mean, film noir and all of its many films in that genre, you know, from the 40s and so on, post-war. I absolutely love this genre. Mm-hmm. I watched when I lived with my grandmother, you know, in college and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I watched so many old 1940s, maybe late 30s, but definitely 1940s movies with her. And of all those many movies, you know, I mean, they're all black and white and everything. And they just have that feel to them. Like, they're old. It's like, I don't know, detective stuff or... You know, like Double Indemnity or something, when people are trying to...
What was your favorite? What's your favorite?
Oh, man, what's my favorite? Well, Double Indemnity I like. Mm-hmm. I think that was Fred McMurray or something. Oh, and Barbara Stanwyck. And Sunset Boulevard, I think was one of the good ones from that era. Yeah, who's in that? William Holden, and I don't even remember the woman's name. But yeah, I mean, I like... a couple of the Bogart movies. So if you think about things like The Maltese Falcon or Casablanca, you know, I like those. I mean, I don't know. I like a number of them of that era.
Yeah. No Hitchcock in your favorites?
Oh, yeah, Hitchcock. I mean, maybe it's not film noir in the traditional sense of black and white.
Right.
But one of my favorites of Hitchcock is Rear Window.
Yeah, Rear Window is great. I saw that way too young, and I was like... I was really like, it scared me a lot.
Well, and the thing that's cool about Rear Window is Jimmy Stewart's looking out the window and he sees this apartment across the way. And that movie Hitchcock made in such a way that was bridging the gap between the theater and television.
Yeah.
And every one of the apartments that he was viewing was a different channel.
Yeah.
With a different story. So one's like the drama, one's the murder mystery, one's the, I don't know, sports, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you like watch it through that framework, and then I don't remember the woman in it. I apologize, but she shows up early on with a white dress. And as it moves forward, she's like, now it's like a white dress with red flowers. And at the end, she's wearing a full-on red dress. So it's showing like her lust for Jimmy for Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, the progression of her lust for him. And then he has like the broken leg and the cast, which is like the phallic symbol. And
oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, so like when you know you look at it through the lens of the I don't know, the what do you call it, where it's like
the pervert.
No. Like symbolism and all.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that movie is like profound with that stuff, you know? And yeah, Hitchcock's great. But anyway, overall though, I'm looking forward to this, man. I can't wait. I love the artistic freedom that comes with the black and white. I love the, even when it rolls in the beginning and it, you see, and you know it's all fake, but you see like the film
grain,
like the static or something, whatever you want to call that. You know what I mean? Where it's like the the imperfections in the film and so on.
Right.
As it's going through the reel. And then, you know, you get to the end and it has like this old school, as if Netflix was around 8 years ago, something. You know what I mean? Like, it's totally not a modern Netflix look. It's like Netflix of the 40s, you know? And I mean, it's so awesome. It is so awesome.
And, you know, the thing I love about the, you know, when of all the stuff that I've heard and saw about Orson Welles loved the low angle, that shot that's shot from a low angle and up on his characters.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so much so that plenty of times they would want a low angle, but the camera equipment was so bulky and huge that he would end up building platforms for people to walk on. Or digging a hole.
Oh, interesting.
He'd dig a hole in the ground to put the camera in the ground so that the lens could be low enough to shoot up. It was, and then once you see the first couple of shots where there's the low angle up, you can't unsee it. You can't unsee it. And you just think like the care that Fincher's giving to this is definitely appreciated.
That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, this is one of those movies I'm not going to watch it when it comes out because I'm going to, unless this scenario plays out, I'm going to wait for it to be one of those like cold, dark, rainy, dreary nights when you're under the blankets, it's storming outside. I mean, you're just hoping for some lightning, you know, and
right.
And yeah, it's like, I want it to be one of those kind of nights, you know, and where you can watch it and just totally get immersed and buy into the film noir that it is.
Right.
And I really hope that it's done within that classic sense.
Oh, yeah.
Where if I were watching like an old Bogart movie or something, or I was watching, you know, a Barbara Stanwyck movie or something from the 40s, and then the next movie to roll was this one, I wouldn't know the time period that it was filmed in. I would only know the time period that it's telling me the story of.
Right.
And
right.
If it can pull that off, oh, this is going to be awesome.
Well, and you know, you got to think of Fincher, his repertoire, his body of work kind of screams modern noir. I don't know if you're familiar with Gone Girl, and I know you've seen Seven.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of films, they're not noir, but they're definitely like these, you know, murder mystery whodunits that harken back to a different film era, you know?
Or maybe it's like a neo-noir.
Exactly. So this is his chance at doing like a traditional take on something that he's emulated and moved forward into the next century. You know, he took the themes of noir and put it in modern settings so that it's palatable and removes alienation devices. You know, Gone Girl is a beautiful movie. I don't know. Are you
Gone Girl? I've heard of it. I've never seen it though. But
oh, you should definitely check it out.
Gone Girl.
Yeah. It's
okay.
2014. He loved. You know, it's a real whodunit. You know.
Okay.
So it's on your list.
Right. So I guess this is a must-see, Mank.
Mank.
So let's jump ahead to the last one for the night.
Okay,
so this
cool.
is from Trailer Junkies...
Alumni.
So Marcos Gabriel.
Yep.
So we interviewed Marcos in episode 57.
57.
So I encourage everyone listening to go back to 57 and listen.
It's a great episode. Our first interview.
Yeah. I gave him the, what do you call it? Where you give like the speed round and he could totally
the lightning round.
The lightning round.
The lightning round. And we're like, we're testing out the lightning round. He's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, he totally called us on it and shut us down, so you could go enjoy that. The old ways, man. This is like, I don't know, horror demon.
It's like a cultural
fantasy. No, I don't even know, man. It's like scary.
It is a straight up horror film, but it has this cultural South American flair to it. You know, it has like,
it's like Mexican, well,
it has
almost like voodoo or something.
Witchcraft.
Yeah, it's scary.
Witchcraft. Yeah, it's super scary. It looks like Marcos wrote it. Some of the great, his great coworkers, Allender directed it. These guys are great. They do great work, and it is quality, and it shows. So, exciting. It's October. It's time for scary movies, but this one, man, is super scary. So,
well, it's funny though. I love the trailer cut.
Uh-huh.
The tone completely freaked me out. So like the other one, Mank, I was saying how I'm going to watch it on that like cold, dreary, rainy, stormy night.
Yes.
This thing is going to be like Sunday morning, sunny, a gentle breeze, early, so I have time to like clear the head before bed so I don't have like weird nightmares, you know?
Yeah.
My overall opinion is it's a narrow niche. So mm-hmm. anybody who's into like the horror, I don't know, gore, demonism, you know, like we were talking, I think this movie's for that person.
Right.
Narrow. I mean, it's a narrow niche. I mean, I think they know it going into it that if we do this type of a horror, it's not hitting the four quadrants, right? Like mm-hmm. you're hitting a small percentage of the population with it. However, I think if you're into this type of a story, if you're into the horror and the gore and everything, dude, this thing's going to be right in your wheelhouse. I could see it completely delivering non-disappointment. I mean, you're going to be all over it. You know what I mean? But like right. I said, though, it's not hitting the four quadrants.
No. But I think we've seen success starting with Blair Witch. And then traveling all the way through all Paranormal Activities and, you know, all of that
stuff. The Ring.
The Ring and, you know, all the foreign stuff that came over and got remade. So this is interesting where you're taking like an urban, that's why I said it's like a cultural legend. And then putting it into this space. I appreciate too, especially in the trailer, there's some scares in there. But, you know, there's no cheap jump scares.
So, wait a minute. We don't have to watch it to the end?
No, you have to watch it to the end. But they don't have to tell you to watch it to the end.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
It's not The Nun. So,
I mean, you know, here's the thing, though. And you're right about that. When you think about horror does its job best when it doesn't try to scare you.
Yeah.
A good example of that would be The Shining.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
The Shining doesn't do anything to scare you. It just is.
Right.
And that's all it is. And when you're finished watching The Shining, like you are completely thrashed and freaked out. And you're thinking to yourself, that was like a masterpiece. Like, what the heck did I just watch? You know, and Kubrick is unbelievable. They didn't go out of their way. They didn't do any jump scares. They didn't do anything other than tell you a story. And in the end, that story they told you was like really scary.
Yeah.
I see that coming out of this, and they're just this woman. I don't know why she's going in the cave. They don't really get to that much. I see this woman going in the cave for whatever the reason, and she encounters the people she encounters, and it works through the progression of the story. And in the end, nothing was done in such a way where it's like they just throw like trumpet music at you really hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, to just like make you jump.
and then they jump cut. And then they, you know
what I mean? And then they jump cut. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen anywhere in this. They're just going to tell you some story that you're going to, when the movie's over, you're going to be like, okay, I'm freaked out. You know? So, yeah, I mean, I know how you feel, and I'm right in your wheelhouse when it comes to horror.
Yeah.
We're not big horror guys. But at the same time, this is like not one of those how many ways can you jump at me and scare me movies. But what is this story trying to tell me? And I mean, you know, like I said, we know Marcos and everything. So, yeah, I'll watch it for sure. you know,
Sunday morning with the lights on.
I could say with certainty that I might not have otherwise if I don't know him, because the trailer like really was scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think the trailer did its job.
It attracted the people that are in this genre into this genre.
That's exactly right.
Which is not us.
That's 100% correct. The trailer did its job and said, if you're in this, if you're into this genre, we're here for you.
Awesome.
And if you're not, well,
that's okay.
We're sorry that you're not into this genre, but you know, we're here anyway,
but we're not going to sell you a musical and deliver a horror movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's something to be said for honesty too. If you know what I mean, like there's sometimes you watch trailers and I've watched, you know, like where you're like, oh, that looks like a comedy. And you watch it and the three comedic scenes were in the trailer. We've talked about this in the pack.
They're all packed in there. Yep.
Yeah. We talked about this, you know, and you're like, oh my God, this is going to be so funny. And the three comedic scenes are in the trailer and the rest is blood and guts and gore. And you're just like, what the hell am I watching? So I think this trailer is certainly honest to what it's trying to deliver.
Right.
Yeah, but man, it looks scary. All right, man. So what are you watching this week?
Okay. So this week was, I think there's Teacher Appreciation Day was one day this week. I think so. I think it was either Monday or Tuesday. And because of that, we watched Mr. Holland's Opus. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I remember this movie. I remember it vaguely, but I remember that I was crying when I saw this the first time, right?
Yeah.
At the end of it. And then I was like, oh, I should share this with the kids, you know? And it's like,
man, if you're doing Teacher Appreciation, how are you not doing Robin Williams?
Oh, Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society.
All right. Well, it was because I saw Mr. Holland's Opus.
Crying.
But yeah, so Mr. Holland's Opus, the kids saw it, they loved it, and then, you know, Bryce and I work out every morning, and the other morning I was like, he was like humming a song, and he was humming that, the John Lennon song, The Beautiful Boy, that Richard Dreyfuss sings to his son at the end of this movie, and it's just like, it's just got these wonderful themes. And when Bryce was like, Bryce was like, I really like that movie. And I said, oh, okay. If you really like that movie, what does tell, you know, explain the theme to me. And he goes, the theme, well, a teacher wanted to, you know, be with his, you know, share his love of music with his son. And he couldn't because his son was deaf. And I was like, no, that's not really a theme. It's kind of more like the plot. I said, the theme is something that you have to hold, you know, as a greater, bigger idea, grander idea of what the movie's about. And he's like, all right, well, what's the theme of this movie? And it's like, the theme of the movie is about the unexpected success or the unconventional success that one can have when they're living their life. And Audrey was, when we were watching it, you know, at the end when his student gets up there and she's like, you know, Mr. Holland might think that he's a failure. And she kind of like, you know, really rails him, you know. And I'm like, but that's it. That's life. Life is about potential. And then as you age and as you grow, the potential diminishes and you have behind you the things you have done, you know what I mean?
Your legacy, essentially.
Yeah, your legacy is what you have behind you and your potential is ahead of you. And just as a matter of time, you always, you know, whittle away at your potential and you always build your legacy behind you. So it's just this interesting concept of wrapping your head around that. So that was one movie that we watched. And then I don't know, did I mention Utopia last week?
Utopia? No, you didn't.
Okay, so on Amazon Prime, which I guess you don't have anymore, I saw something on IMDb, which is also owned by Amazon. So this is interesting that their marketing worked on me. It was like a behind the scenes of Utopia. And I watched it and I was like, oh, okay, that sounds kind of interesting. They kind of compared it to like Goonies meets Stranger Things. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting, like, you know, comparison. I'm willing to check that out, you know. And I check it out and it is beautifully done. 8 episodes in and out, you know, beautiful thing.
One season
so far, but I think
so far, yeah.
We'll see where they go from here. And much like I talk about potential, it's like every show that you start, and I think I wrote about this and we talk about it often, but when you have an idea of a show and you start something, as a viewer, you have like, oh, here's all the possibilities of the places where this can go. And as it takes turns through the first season, you're like, you're either going to be surprised and disappointed, or surprised and excited because it's even better than what you had thought. Or you will have guessed it and you're satisfied. So there's a balance of satisfaction and surprise that you're trying to balance as a showrunner and as a creator of art. There's this media that you want people to keep coming back to over the course of, you know, episodes, and then of course over the course of seasons. But this first season is kind of this perfect taste, and it has these ebbs and flows of what's going on. There's a huge conspiracy. I will say, because we are in COVID-19 dystopia, this Utopia, which is the comic sequel to the original comic in the story, which was called Dystopia, is based on a conspiracy around viruses.
Oh, jeez.
So for many people, this will hit way too close to home and way too soon. But for me, it was just like this perfect balance of...
Too on the nose or...
No, not at all. I mean, this was created before COVID and greenlit before COVID. And it just kind of released in this space. And it kind of pokes fun at like the egomaniacal tech startup leaders of Bezos, who owns obviously Amazon and Amazon Prime, and Zuckerberg, and even a little bit of Elizabeth Holmes is in there, because there's a medical angle to John Cusack's character, who is the super scientist billionaire philanthropist in this story.
Sure.
And he adopts all these children. And basically early on in the episodes, he sits down for dinner with his dozen or so children, and they're all age range. And there's a great disparity in all the cultures. So you can tell he's like, you know, Angelina and Brad when they're together, and they're just like adopting kids from all over the world, you know, so you kind of get that vibe from him. And he said his big thing is, when you sit down to eat, you know, we used to say, when we would sit down to eat, well, what are three things that happen in your day? His mantra, his saying, when he sat down at the dinner table to eat, he went around the room to all the kids and he said, what have you done today to earn your space in this crowded world? Right? Hmm. And each one of his kids had to meditate on that. And they knew this was coming. You know, they've been his kids for a while, some more longer than others. But everybody had something to say. And then, you know, some kids were poking fun. And then he would twist it to be like, you know, but when you said that joke, you actually mean this, you know. So he's like this loving thing and loving guy. And he has this thing. But there's all this darkness, you know. There's all this darkness from the conspiracy that's going on. So it's a wonderful, wonderfully woven tale, and I love fictitious conspiracy and fictitious cults. So it kind of has a cult vibe to it, even though there's no real cult in it.
And what's the conspiracy?
The conspiracy is the viruses. There's a flu strain that's out there.
Oh, okay.
And it is a known flu strain that is manufactured and then released on the people to push the economic gains of maybe having a vaccine for a
drug company.
Yeah. A very specific vaccine for a very specific flu. So it's great. It's perfect. It's very well done. How about you? What have you been watching?
Yeah, our week has been all Cobra Kai all week.
Ah, awesome.
Yeah, so I told you last week we were going to start it. We are, well, it's two seasons. We are 1.5 seasons. I don't know what that is. Maybe a total of 14 episodes so far.
Okay.
They're anywhere from like 25 to 35 minutes. Oh. So it's pretty quick.
Snack size.
Yeah, you get through pretty quick. Totally canon to the original movies. I don't know who on this planet relives high school to the extent these guys do. I mean, it's like 1984. Fast forward to 2020 or 2019 or whatever. 2018 maybe. Fast forward to 2019. It's as if time had not passed.
Right.
You know, the way they relive high school and stuff. I mean,
Yeah.
It's kind of cheesy in that way, kind of like corny in that way. What's cool, though, is seeing the perspective of Daniel LaRusso's bully. So Johnny from, like, you know, when you know, back in the original movie. Seeing his perspective on it, because he always felt like he was the one who was bullied. And he was defending himself. And it was his growing up with a step-parent who was, you know, really a jerk, and he had to live up to expectations of others, and you know, so that's kind of interesting to see, because when you watch the original movie, that wasn't there at all.
I thought they had one. They had one little throwaway scene.
Maybe they did. I don't remember.
I think they had one throwaway scene where the dad or the stepdad comes in or drops him off at the dojo or something. When I heard the stuff about what Cobra Kai was, I was like, yeah, they like. It was like, it's kind of like the way Rogue One is based on the joke of, oh, it'd be stupid to build this Death Star with this back door. You know what I mean? That somebody could so easily destroy with one photon torpedo.
Right.
And then they build the whole movie construct about it. And it's, you know, it's Rogue One. So this is like the whole 20 years later or 30 years later story of what it's like after this, because everybody's people, you know what I mean? That's
right.
They're all people, and from their perspective, everyone's trying to do the best thing that they can.
Like in the end, I don't think, and the way this kind of plays it out and stuff, it's like people aren't fully malicious. People aren't going out in the morning to say, like, I'm a jerk, I'm going to just go beat up people.
Right.
They're doing what they can. Like, you know, he's helping kids who are being bullied to stop being bullied. So he's going to teach them karate so they could defend themselves. And then in the end, the nerds who are getting bullied become the bullies, you know, and it's just a different, it's a take on, you know, it's kind of like a flip it on its head sort of a story in a way.
And the one thing that I found really interesting, and you have to tell me how it plays out, but Danny LaRusso, coming off the high of Karate Kid 1, and, you know, you kind of have to discount 2 and 3 and the next Karate Kid, you know what I mean? But coming off the high, if you just take 1.
And let me just stop you there first. So this whole thing goes through, and they never talk about the subsequent movies. It's strictly the Karate Kid.
Okay, good.
So even they probably knew, like, yeah, we don't want to relive those.
Let's not branch too far off of, you know, that. But I mean, when you have the high of beating your bully in the ring, in the dojo, supposedly, when I heard about this, the whole first season's all about how big of a jerk it's made him in his life. Like, it made him a success, and yet he couldn't get the chip off of his shoulder. So how does that play out well in the season, in the first season?
You'll just have to watch and find out, won't you?
I will put it on my list. I've been trying to get Anne to watch it, and I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, they sort of address that. I don't want to give too much away if you haven't seen it, because they sort of address that, and that's kind of where the cheesiness comes in, because they keep reliving the past.
Okay.
And I'm not saying, I mean, we all do it, right? We all say like, oh, I once did this thing, you know, in my life and, you know, it was a great achievement or whatever. Like we all do it. But they do it to the point that it's kind of like there's A and right now they're at T and all those letters in between don't even like count.
Right, right.
You know, maybe they went to college and they did some business loan and he starts up all these dealerships and he's a success and he does like none of that matters. It's like I kicked him in the face and now we're back rivals again. That whole the past 35, 40 years just like
didn't matter
is vapor. So that's the point that's a little bit cheesy, I think.
That's on Netflix, right?
It's on Netflix, yeah.
Okay.
And then a lot of parallels play out. So, you know, the one kid is dating this girl. The other one has the crush on the girl. And then a lot of what goes on in the show is assumptions. Things are going down. Nobody bothers to ask anybody anything. They all jump to conclusions and then like fights break out.
So it's like Three's Company.
Dude, I thought this, it's like, where's Mr. Roper? You know, I thought the same thing, you know. No, but you're right though. It's like they'll sit there and she gets grounded. The daughter gets grounded. The boyfriend's like, where the heck is she? And then all of a sudden there's like this other guy who just happens to be knocking at the door or something. And it's like, that's it. That's why she's not answering. Cause she's like, you know, she's like hooking up with this dude. But like he never bought. Oh, and then he calls and like leaves a voicemail to apologize. But then like later as the show goes on, you're thinking like, well, did she ever listen to the voicemail? Because had she listened to the voicemail, this whole scene would be eliminated.
Right.
You know, and yeah, so there's like a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of forgiveness as far as the scenes and such. And
just suspend the disbelief.
It's cornball, but you know what? If you grew up watching The Karate Kid and stuff, I mean, it is canon as canon can be. It just fits right in that wheelhouse. And it's fun. It's enjoyable. I would certainly watch it. A lot of it's predictable. Mm-hmm. And some of it is so over the top predictable that you actually predict the opposite. And the opposite is actually what you predicted to be correct. Because, and the reason you do is because you're like, it can't be this easy.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then of course you're like, okay, it can't be this easy. The other guy's obviously going to win.
Uh-huh.
Because otherwise if he wins, then it's too on the nose. And you're like, the way you logic and reason through it, it plays out exactly as you logicked and reasoned.
Right,
and
right.
You're just like, yeah, I had a feeling that was how it was going to go down because it was too easy otherwise.
Exactly. Exactly. It's kind of what I was talking about as far as like, is it satisfying because you predicted it? Or is there a bit of a surprise because you thought that certain thing was going to happen and the opposite thing happens? You know, I think.
Yeah, and it's a slight surprise, you know, just for no other reason than they can't be too on the nose.
Right.
So on the nose. So they do give you that like glimpse of surprise, but like, and you see the surprise coming, you just don't know how it's going to play out.
Right. And it's so funny because whenever we're watching something, there are lines of dialogue in many movies and TV shows that almost have to be said. And I think Audrey likes to pretend that her superpower is predicting those lines and blurting them out seconds before the characters on the screen see it. You had to say it, you know.
So what you're saying is Audrey could be my daughter? I know right now Clarissa's listening to this while riding her bike home from work saying, oh my God, that's Jim. I can't.
Do you know?
And you know where I get it?
Where?
My grandfather used to do that with Archie Bunker and George Jefferson. And, you know, he used to try and get all the zingers. And I'd be like, Pop, stop it. You know, and guess who does it now? Me and Audrey.
Well, You do it and Audrey does it. But when Audrey does it, the thing, so I don't mind her like blurting that out. It's her victory dance that she does afterwards where she starts saying, I guess I wrote this movie. I guess I wrote this TV show. And she just spends 5 minutes talking about how she wrote it and stuff. And I'm like, calm down. All right. Everybody was thinking it. You said it. Okay.
No, and you're like, stop it. I'm missing all the rest of the lines that you didn't get.
Exactly.
That's amazing. But I do the same thing, you know, where I'm always like, and then like sometimes I'll say it. It'll be exactly what I said, just like a word off.
Right.
And I'll be like, well, that's what I meant. So, but yeah, I'd say check it out. Utopia sounds cool. I can't wait to check that one out. We might get back to Amazon Prime. I'm not, you know, the main reason is we weren't ordering a whole lot of stuff and we weren't using it to watch anything. So we got rid of it.
Okay.
It's kind of like I paused Hulu.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing about Hulu, though. We were going to, I was like, I'm going to turn off Hulu. And they said, well, don't, I'm not exaggerating too. They it comes back up and it says, don't delete us. Just pause this. You can always reinstate it later, you know? And it was like the way they did it, like, was kind of like, you're like, oh,
okay.
You know, it's like, yeah, you're like a cute teddy bear. I guess I'll keep you around for a little while.
I'll put you in a box. I won't throw you away. I'll just put you in a box and you'll be there in the box.
And all I remember thinking was, whoever came up with like pausing and not deleting, like it's the same exact thing.
Yeah.
I'm still not paying. I could still re-up anytime I want. Even if I delete, they keep my whole profile. It's like Netflix is like that.
Right.
But just hitting pause is like that reassurance to them. Maybe you're going to come back, and the reassurance to you that, well, I'm still like somewhat fond of you.
Yeah. They're reducing the friction for you to come back. Like you don't have to set up a whole new account. It's just like, oh, turn it back on.
Exactly.
Just flip the switch back on. We'll take exactly, your credit card information. You know, we have your credit card information. We'll just turn it back on. Don't worry about it. Just one click and we're back in business with us.
And I think they get it too, where it's like, okay, you watch the three shows you're going to watch. We know you're jumping ship to HBO or somewhere else.
Yeah.
But we also know you're going to come back when those shows are done.
Right.
In a way, it's a wink and a nod. We know how the game's played. It's the new world order of streaming, you know, and
I will say that I was speaking of this. I had a scare today. I was at work, but that is incorrect. I was working from home.
Yeah, you were at work in your house,
and I was working, and I was working on something, and I was trying to like just like hammer it out, and I get an email out of nowhere, and the email says, "Oh, we're so sorry to see you go," and I'm like, "What? Where did I go? What's going on?" Amazon Prime. Sorry, you leaving Amazon Prime. And I yell over to Ann. I was like, Ann, did you cancel the Amazon Prime?
Was this real or was this like a troll thing?
It was. And that's why I was like, all right, I'm going to stop down this thing that I'm really trying to just get done, you know, for work. And I'm going to stop down and I'm going to look at it. So I look at it. And right at the same time, you know, our silicone straws are being delivered over the gate. And I'm getting an email from Amazon saying, that's the email I was waiting for. And it's saying, your straws have delivered, you know. And then I start poking around and I'm looking to re-up. I was like, oh, we got to turn it back on. I got to turn it back on. And then I look over and it was too difficult to figure out. I was like, all right, let me just get through this project that I was doing. So I went back to the project. And then half an hour later, I get an email. Welcome to Amazon Prime. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, what's going on? I was like, maybe they're switching from like the, for my carrier from Sprint paying for it back to me paying for it, you know, because I had just turned the Sprint off.
Okay.
And I thought maybe that's what they're doing. And then I got another email saying your bicycle, Bryce broke his pedals on his bicycle. He broke one of the pedals. So I ordered them this morning.
Okay.
And then I got an email right after we got reinstated. Your pedals are on their way. They'll be here tomorrow. You know what I mean? So it's like, I was like, you cannot turn off the spigot of Amazon Prime for me because I just order stuff. And my kids are like, is it same day? Is it same day shipping? Can we get same day shipping? And I'm like, no, it's tomorrow. All right. Just deal with getting the stuff. We order it today. We get it tomorrow. It's not.
You know what your kids are going to do? You know what your kids are going to do? Like when they're our age, they're going to be telling their kids, we used to have to wait a day. That was when it was rough. You guys get your stuff ordered. You order it and it's at the door immediately.
You think about it and your implant, your Bezos implant in your head ordered it a week before you needed it.
The Bezos implant. Just know though that the pedals are righty. The right side is righty tighty, and the left side is lefty tighty.
Ah, okay, good to
so
know.
So it's the left side's a reverse thread. So just remember that. So you're not like, why doesn't it work?
Maybe that's why I couldn't take off Anne's pedal on her bike to replace Bryce's this morning.
That's probably right, because the right side is lefty loosey. The right side is let me say that again. The right side is lefty loosey. The left side is righty loosey.
That's too much to know. I'm going to take it over to Frank, and Frank and I will do
it. It's just
together.
The left side is completely opposite, and you need a pedal wrench because a regular old wrench won't fit into the pedals there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got to have a pedal wrench too.
See, you know all these things that I was damning the sky at 7 o'clock or 6:45 this morning as I'm trying to.
I can't tell you how many customers like you came into the bike shop saying I can't get my pedals off, or I got the one off and the one just keeps getting tighter. I don't know what's going on. It's like, yeah, try going the other way, bucko.
What do you suggest? You suggest just doing it all on the ground so the wheel doesn't spin? Because that's also too what I was having.
No, you hold the crank with one hand and you wrench it with the other, and then you flip and you hold the crank and you wrench it. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And you're kind of like reach over the bike and the way you grab and wrench, you know?
I'm sure Frank and I will figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. It's to the more experienced, it's easy.
Right.
But yeah. All right, Ted, before we go down bicycle talk, let's get out of here.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. I had a lot of fun tonight.
Awesome.
All right, bye.
See you.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.